Under the Golden Dome is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, and by the Iowa Bankers Association. Helping Iowans reach their financial goals is what Iowa banks are all about. Discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly legislative podcast from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble. The Iowa Department of Revenue is like a state version of the Internal Revenue Service.
I'm Craig Paulson. I'm the director of the Iowa Department of Revenue. I've been there a little under a year.
Director Paulson is talking to a joint Administration and Regulation Appropriations subcommittee. This means there are legislators from the House and Senate. This committee determines the level of funding for some of the state's departments. Directors often visit appropriation subcommittees early in the session to present their annual goals, explain their budget requests, and answer questions.
First of all, the mission of the department, and I think that's been the mission for several decades now, and we have no designs on changing that, obviously, is to collect all the taxes required by law, but no more. The vision, which we did recently change as we've gone through some of the strategic planning, is just Iowa will be a state where it's easy to understand and comply with tax obligations for all Iowa tax filers. It's a vision. I'm not going to sit here today and argue that we have accomplished that, but that's the direction we're going with our activities.
In recent years, there have been long waits for people calling the department to get help concerning their taxes. Individual income taxes are handled by the Tax Management Division. That division's administrator is former state auditor Mary Mosman. Part of what they do is interact with people contacting the department. Mosman says in the last year, there has been progress in creating shorter wait times.
The key things that we did is we identified the highest volume of calls and tried to work with those quantities. The three types of call that we receive the most volumes are rent reimbursement, password reset for anybody who's doing e-file and pay, and where's my refund?
Rent reimbursement allows Iowans to receive up to $1,000 a year if they've paid rent. To qualify, they must be older than 65 or disabled and have an income of less than $24,000.
So we really didn't do many changes to the rent reimbursement. We did significant changes to the password reset. We actually decided to contract with a firm that the state works with, and we carved all of those calls and they go directly to that firm. This firm is handling every type of password reset call in a secure and efficient manner. Their wait time is averaging 90 seconds and they're having call resolution at approximately 4 to 5 minutes. And with the Where's My Refund, we decided to automate that. So that is basically something now that taxpayers can get simply by going to our webpage and going through an app type of program. If they did get through to a call center person, the call center person would basically be using that same app. So that has really worked out well for us and helped us achieve some of our objectives.
Another change Director Craig Paulson wants to make is to update the department's IT.
Our systems are old. They are as old basically as when they were deployed. So if it was a tax type that was computerized 10 years ago, the system's 10 years old. If it's a tax type that was computerized 40 years ago, then our system is 40 years old.
Since there are always changes to tax laws, even minor ones, changes to their systems are always required.
Almost everything you guys change in tax policy every year, in addition to when sometimes when we change rules, requires someone to come in and reprogram the system. It is just a very clunky, outdated system. So what we've gone to is, or what we're recommending, is a commercial off-the-shelf system. It'll be web-based, it'll be configurable. So if you guys change a tax rate, instead of having to go in and reprogram at a very base level, you know, however many lines of code in the computer, it's a configuration, much like you do in different programs on your personal computer. And it's scalable.
The department's current older systems can't be integrated, and Paulson says it's not very efficient.
And the collaborative nature, I mean, the systems we have right now, not only are we siloed across state agencies and state government, we are siloed within state government, and in particular, I guess that I'm speaking to today, within tax types within the department.
This week, the department began request for proposals for companies to submit a new IT system plan. If things move along, integrating a new system would begin next January. It would take approximately 3 years until the old system would be shut down. Paulson says once a new system is completely running, it will cost less to operate.
No doubt there's a cash outlay for this investment. It has about a 5-year payback, but I'll also tell you that doing nothing Last fiscal year, we spent just a little bit over $18 million to operate our existing systems. Probably a good two-thirds to three-quarter of that was programming. We think that number, that $18 million number, drops down to five.
After Paulson leaves the subcommittee, he says his request for a new system is important, but in the event it isn't funded...
Sky is not falling. Is it going to fall someday? Possibly. But I don't want to leave anybody with the wrong impression. I mean, this is a very serious request. I think it's absolutely the right decision for the state of Iowa. I think that there are taxpayers out there who should be actually excited about this. In particular, a small business owner who wants to comply with the law, they should be extremely excited. Tax preparers, obviously, would be as well. But I also don't want to overstate the significance of it.
The Department of Revenue is one of many large state agencies meeting with various appropriations subcommittees right now. Final budget proposals from these committees usually come out in the last month of the session, where they will eventually be brought to the chambers for debate. This is Under the Golden Dome from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble.
Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio, a statewide network powered by its listeners. Become a member today to support the reporting you hear on this podcast at iowapublicradio.org/donate.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association and by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
Right now, a driver can be fined for reading or typing on a phone, but it's a secondary offense, so if an officer sees someone reading their phone while driving, they can't pull them over for that reason alone. This year, there are two bills that would move this to a primary offense and include more restrictions on a driver. The most recent bill comes from a House Transportation Subcommittee.
So we'll get started. This is House File 2119, a bill for hands-free mode on your cell phone while you're driving.
Republican Representative Ann Meyer is the chair of this subcommittee and author of this bill. This bill doesn't limit distracted driving to a phone, but to any electronic communication device unless it can be controlled by voice commands.
So we're just going to go around the room, and then I'm going to have you give your name and give your comments at this time, please.
Lelia Gardner is from the National Association for Amateur Radio. She is the section manager for the Midwest. Gardner supports the bill's ban on distracted driving.
The comprehensive language is narrow and threatens to exclude amateur radio as a viable activity in Iowa.
The bill has exceptions. It allows the use of an electronic device for safety-related information, like for emergencies or weather. Amateur radio operators across the country are often very active in these kinds of situations by using a handheld radio. Gardner proposes an amendment specifying amateur radio devices.
And it's based on research and surrounding states who have been successful in their inclusion of this as an exemption for amateur radio. And it would be stated a driver using two-way mobile radio transmitters or receivers for licensees of the Federal Communications Commission in the amateur radio service.
Amateur radio operators are licensed by the FCC, and there is training required. Chandler Collins is from the Department of Public Safety and also supports the inclusion of amateur radio.
Minnesota and Illinois, among some other states, have that similar language in there for those operators. And I think that would make sense with this bill. In addition, we just want to call out what we like about the bill and what it does.
This bill has a grace period of 6 months before officers would issue a $100 fine. If the bill becomes law, it would begin on July 1st, where officers would only be able to give a warning until January 1st.
Talking with our law enforcement officers, our peace officers, ultimately the goal is compliance without having to write tickets. We want to see is the ability for people to understand that by doing this, they're going to be safer, the highways are going to be safer, and that this would allow, I think, 6 months for people to gain compliance without that financial burden. Or that financial punishment. The other thing that I like that is in here that wasn't in last year's version is the idea of restricting streaming and some of the video operations. What I've seen and what we've seen is that other states that have previously gone hands-free before Iowa are now looking to add that to their legislation because they're realizing they kind of left open a purview where somebody can start a video on Netflix or start a movie before leaving the house and never touch their phone and be in compliance with the law while still watching something on the highway. So,
cars already have a number of electronics and displays. Mike Triplett from the Alliance of Automotive Innovation says this bill needs to make sure it doesn't prohibit what cars already have.
Our concern is the billions of dollars that our manufacturers have invested in safety technology in the dashboard that allows people to drive without the phone in their hands. The concern we have gets to the definition of electronic communication device. In the draft that you have, it's different than the draft in the Senate. The draft in the Senate actually excludes the dashboard technology. I realize that Chandler and I are probably going to parse over a couple different words here, so if you give us some flexibility to attempt to work out something that either mirrors something like the Senate language or something new that addresses our concerns, we'll get back to you as soon as we can get some agreement on that.
Overall, there is support for the concept of this bill from various law enforcement agencies, insurance industries, and the Bicycle Association. Democratic Representative Roz Smith is supportive of the bill, but wants to also address racial profiling.
I do have legislation that we've had in the House that hasn't had much traction, but I do think we do need some safeguards, knowing that there are biases that take place, and we need to make sure that we are doing a good job of making sure our law enforcement is safe, our constituents are safe. But there's mutual accountability. If we're expecting people to use these modifications to driving, also make sure that we have that shared accountability and ownership to make sure that there isn't an increased level of racial profiling that takes place.
There is agreement on having a hands-free bill move forward, and the chair of this subcommittee, Representative Ann Meyer, brings up an example.
However, when I'm driving down the highway and I see people weaving in and out of their lane a little bit, and they don't even look up from their phone, and they're traveling down the road at 70 miles an hour, this has been a problem. Every person here has seen it, I'm sure. A constituent brought it to me over the interim, though, and said they really, you know, her husband's been run off the road. We had deaths in our town because of it. They really wanted to see something done. So I appreciate everyone's input, and I definitely want to get together and make this work for everybody. And so thanks for your input and your amendments. And I'm going to go ahead and pass it through to committee for more conversation. Okay. Thanks, guys.
A similar Senate bill also passed a subcommittee with some of these suggested amendments. Those amendments are expected to be brought before the full committee in the House and Senate. The judicial branch has 39 problem-solving courts. Sometimes called specialty courts, they are designed to address underlying conditions leading to criminal or abusive conduct. It often involves placing someone into treatment with goals to achieve. They are divided into specific groups, with examples including drug courts, family treatment courts, and mental health courts. A Senate Judiciary Subcommittee considers a bill that will place veterans treatment courts in each of Iowa's 8 judicial districts. Like most subcommittees, the legislators ask for those gathered to offer their input, like Rob Zaley from the American Legion of Iowa.
Treatment courts, of course, keeping offenders out of jail when they need treatment is very important to us, especially when it comes to veterans who are often dealing with brain injury or PTSD, some other kind of service-related injury, pain, and they're self-medicating. They're self-medicating with alcohol and drugs, and they are getting themselves in trouble with the law.
Dale Woolery from the Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy supports this kind of court, but worries about the specifics of expanding.
We just know that from our experience working with courts and corrections on creating drug courts in Iowa, one of the questions that does come up is, how do you increase capacity, or will you be moving services from one population to another? So I didn't see a provision for resources here, so that's one question I guess I would have is, will capacity grow to be able to treat or help more people? But otherwise, we're undecided and very interested.
Caitlin Jarzin from the Iowa Judicial Branch is also supportive, but says the judicial branch would rather create these courts instead of the legislature.
Our veterans treatment courts are done in partnership with the VA currently, and it would be difficult for the judicial branch to comply with a legislative mandate if the VA can't or won't comply. It would be really hard to put a requirement in the code when we don't know what resources the VA has available, and they're really an instrumental partner in this process. So just to be clear, we'd like to see more veterans courts, and we'd like to see more specialty courts, and we very much support the concept. We just want to make sure it's done through a strategic plan.
The chair of the subcommittee is Senator Jason Schultz.
Ms. Jarzin, thank you for coming in. It's not easy to be the one person saying, hey, we need to be careful, but I appreciate it because I know the courts support our veterans. There's no doubt here whatsoever. Everybody here is supporting, wants to support veterans. We're going to move the bill forward. The chair asked that he could be the one to have this in his hand, so we're going to move this through the process.
Schultz is referring to the chair of the Judiciary Committee, Senator Brad Zahn. Schultz says early on he had reservations about problem-solving courts.
I started getting a little bit worried myself that we were going to have different standards, different routes to justice, different support systems. You know, so some people would just fall right through the criminal code, and some people would get support, and it wouldn't be even. But what I've started to come to see is that the branch, the judicial branch, the system is simply adapting to the different needs of Iowans. Different issues, different experiences, different reasons for problems. And as long as the Constitution and the Iowa Code is the same for everybody and referred to, I don't know why it would be wrong to have a different system for people as long as the justice and the underlying the principles are the same.
After the subcommittee signs the bill to advance to the full committee, Senator Schultz says he still has questions about these kinds of courts, but he's open to expanding them further.
But it needs to be watched carefully because you need to have one underlying foundation, both the Constitution, U.S. and Iowa, and an originalist interpretation of Iowa Code, so that everybody at least has one foundation of justice and not different laws for different people.
There is only one veterans treatment court in Iowa. It began in 2015 in Woodbury County. This is the Legislative Weekly Podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pemble. The Senate gaveled in and passed a couple of bills. One is a supplemental appropriations spending bill. This is where unspent money from the current fiscal year is applied. It allocates an additional $20 million for flood relief from the March 2019 floods. While this bill passed unanimously, critics say it's not enough this or last year. In 2019, they allocated $15 million. But others say the additional $20 million helps keep the process going, and there is concern about jeopardizing additional federal funding. Under the Golden Dome is a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. To hear more stories, follow our Statehouse reporter Katerina Sestarik's work at iowapublicradio.org. Grant Gerlach has stories there too about much of the action at the Capitol. This show's script editor is Michael Leland. Lindsay Moon and Matt Siren are our digital team folks. They push ones and zeros to make this and many other bits of online information flow right to you. Special thanks to Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson for story inspiration and endless knowledge. You can help this podcast by making sure you are subscribed. Apple, Google, Stitcher, wherever you like to hear podcasts, then share this podcast with your friends on social media. I'm John Pemble. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.